We're not, the whole design of what we're doing here is that we are not intended to spend all our time in the first two chapters and the last chapter. That's the way we study Job. We talk about what happened whenever God said, have you considered my servant Job and everything. Spent all that time talking about the adversity Job had. And so my purpose in this study, and perhaps it's as much for my benefit as for yours, is to study what his friends said. The more I do this study and think about, let me start all over. Got this thing working here, okay? The more I study this, and I'm really enjoying studying what his friends have said to him. I don't know if his friends are not the biggest part of the adversity. I mean, the other is physical, and I understand it, and it becomes emotional whenever those children die, and I know that's not physical. That's emotional there and everything. But I'm telling you, if you have friends like this, I don't know where you'd ever find enemies. Because the more I study this, and the more I try to figure out how on earth am I going to be able to paraphrase what these friends are saying, it's really, really difficult to know how to do it. And so Job is faced with all of this adversity, and his friends come to him. I heard somebody make the comment, I guess it was at Seoul. I believe somebody made the comment at Seoul, and I wish I had made it last week. I knew it, but I didn't know it. God said, have you considered my servant Job? Do you know the devil knew who Job was? I think that is remarkable. Even that comment is pretty interesting. I mean, we talk about God knowing about us and everything, and the devil did not say, Job who? All he had to do is, have you considered my servant Job? Which means that the Satan was involved and knew about that servant Job. Now the devil is not omnipresent. Unlike God, who can be at the same place everywhere on earth at exactly the same time, the devil's not omnipresent. And so the Bible says, resist the devil, and what's going to happen? He's going to flee from you. Well, that means he's not present. At that time when you've resisted him, there is that time in your life in which the devil is not present in your life like God is present in your life. And sometimes if we're not careful, we'll misunderstand some of the things about the devil. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. But he only departs for a season. After he tempted Jesus, the Bible said he departed from him for a season. But it's remarkable. Have you considered my servant and put your name in that sentence? I know God knows you about you. Does Satan know about you? And are you aware that in us there is that responsibility of being sober and being vigilant, because the devil, as a roaring lion, goes about seeking whom he may devour. And so whenever you get to this study, you come to a realization of the fact that his friends come to him, and there's a series of friends. Last week, if you can just get to that slide that says end of lesson one, if you can back up to that slide, end of week one, we sort of stopped right in the middle of Eliphaz. Eliphaz in chapters 4 and 5, it talks about that suffering causes trials. And last week we looked in chapter 4 and we talked about Job's former blessings and the blessings that he formerly had. And then all of a sudden Eliphaz says, guess what, Job? God... your sin is the cause of your punishment. I mean, he's just talking about Job. God was really, really in your life, but he's not there anymore. Now, wonder what caused that, Job. And then Eliphaz says, and last night or the other night, he says, I was in my bedroom, and there was this movement in my bedroom, and I saw this spirit. And this spirit was there, and figuratively, this spirit told me that you're a sinner. And that's where we finished up last week. How do you know that happened? How do you know that happened? And yet sometimes people will say to us, well, God told me this is what you ought to do. Or sometimes individuals will say, well, I've been praying about this and I just arrived at the conclusion overnight that this is exactly what I should do. Wait a minute. Is the devil in your life? Is the devil trying to tempt you to get you to do wrong and everything? Let me say it this way. When God speaks, listen, He doesn't whisper. Joe, did you hear that? When God speaks, He doesn't whisper. God speaks with an exclamation point. Now, I want you to go to Mount Sinai. I want you to go to the works of the revelation of the will of God, the confirmation of the message with the miracles. Is absolutely an astounding thing. And how on earth, or why on earth should Job believe his friend, who really doesn't sound like a friend, who says, well, I saw this spirit in my life, and the spirit said you're wrong. What's your comment? It's what you say? Right? There had to be a way of knowing the message was from God. Had to be that absolute evidence in relationship to that. Go ahead, John.
Maybe the message wasn't from God.
It's what?
Maybe the message wasn't from God.
How do you know that? Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point. God doesn't speak with a whisper.
Wasn't Job in the patriarchal time known when God spoke directly to the patriarchs?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you see, you've got the confirmation in the Old Testament of Elijah and Elisha. And all of a sudden, there's not been a multitude of miracles, but right before you get Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, and you get these last 16 prophets of the Old Testament, along comes Elijah, who does 7 miracles, and his protege, Elisha, who took his place, asked that he might have a double portion of the spirit of Elijah. Elijah did 7 miracles. You want to guess how many Elisha did? You guess it. You know, it's not hard to guess. There are 14 miracles of Elisha in the Bible. Now, all of a sudden, you've got these 21 miracles, and there's authentication for that. And so in the New Testament church, not everybody could work miracles, even others, those who had other spiritual gifts, like the gift of prophecy. But the authenticity of the message was made possible by the miracles that the apostles had done, and Jesus' statement that said, I'll send you prophets, and I'll send you wise men and scribes. And so Jesus said, I'm going to send these prophets. Now then, let's get to the text and see if we can possibly make it through 4 or 5 more chapters tonight. Let's look in chapter 5. In chapter 5, the early part of chapter 5, Job's friend. Now, become Job, and you're sitting there, and Job's friend says that God is just, and He punishes individuals, and the ones He punishes are those who are wrong. You know how Job's going to describe these people? Miserable comforters. Have you ever had anybody that tried to say something to you, and it all came out wrong, and you just wish they'd leave? You wish they hadn't even come. You know, listen, Job says, call out now. Is there anyone who will answer you yet? And to which of the holy ones will you turn? Go ahead, Job, call out to God. Which of the holy ones are you going to turn? Wrath kills a foolish man, and envy slays a simple one. I have seen the foolish talking, taking root, but suddenly I cursed his dwelling place. And then he says, his sons are far from safety. They are crushed in the gates, and there is no deliverer. Whose sons are crushed? Whose sons had just been crushed? God gets after the wicked, and there's no one to whom they can turn. Job, would you please leave? Isn't that amazing? I mean, he says, Job, don't you understand that all of this adversity that's come upon you, and he says, verse 6 says, affliction does not come from the dust, nor does trouble spring forth of the ground. Man is born in trouble as the sparks fly upward. But as for me, Job, if I were you, you ever have a friend like that? Let me tell you what I'd do if I were you. Well, they're not you. And they don't understand the real situation. You know, you're talking, well, I'll tell you what, if I was married to him, I'll tell you what I'd do. Well, you're not married to him. You don't know how he's going to respond whenever you do what your friend says you ought to do. Now, the Bible says, in the multitude of counselors, there's wisdom. But you need to hear the other part. Psalms 1 says, he walketh not in the counsel of who? The ungodly. Just because somebody says, if I were you, wait a minute. Is that person a godly person? I mean, here's Job's friend says, now Job, if I were you, I would seek God and I would commit my cause. God who does great things, unsearchable, marvelous things without number. He pours out rain on the earth and he sets on high those who are lowly. I'm in chapter 5, verse 11. And those who mourn are lifted up to safety. He frustrates the devices of the crafty so that their hands cannot carry out their plan. And he catches the wise in their own craftiness. Guess what, Job? You're caught up in the anger of God. Job, just go ahead and tell us what you've done. Now, that's not, I've added that phrase there, but that's the implication of everything he's saying. That's why I said, this may be worse than the adversity that he has. What do his friends do when he got there? They look at him. For how long? 7 days. Is there anything worse than having somebody just looking at you when you're in pain? And they just sit there and stare at him. I can think of only one thing worse, and that is when they open their mouths. You know, I remember once Judy had a miscarriage when we were in New Zealand and carried her to the hospital. And they carried her back, and it's hard in the British hospital. Forgive me, you folks from England and the British Commonwealth. It's hard to get kind of service in New Zealand that you can used to in America. And Judy was really, really hurting. And so I found a nurse, and I said, she's really hurting. She's got a lot of pain. And the lady came in to Judy, and she said, are you in pain? And Judy said, yes. And she just went, just shook her head and walked right out. Now, I've got a temper. I know what I want to do to that woman. That's my wife. Don't you walk out of here without saying, I'll be back with some pain medication in a minute or something. Just walked out, just clicking her tongue, and walked away from her and everything. That's what Job's friends are doing. Shame on you, Job. We're here, and now we're opening up our mouth, and God takes care. Verse 15? He saves the needy from the sword, from the mouth of the mighty. The poor have hope, and injustice shuts her mouth. But blessed is that man whom God corrects. Therefore, Job, everything that has happened to you, it is God correcting you. And you just need to accept the fact that you've done wrong and God's out to get you. You want a friend like that? And that's the very statement that Eliphaz has to say. We cannot read every one of the verses, but he says, look in verse 19. Job, if you'll just confess, he will deliver you in 6 troubles, yea, and 7s no evil shall touch you. Job, if you just fess up. In famine he shall redeem you from death, and in war from the power of the sword. You shall be hidden from the scourge of the tongue. Guess whose tongue I'd like to be hidden from? Eliphaz, you know, I can't say shut up. But Eliphaz, be quiet. And so he says, you shall be hidden from the scourge of the tongue, and shall not be afraid of destruction when he comes. Job, just go ahead and admit that you are wrong in what you have done. And it says in verse 25, if you'll just fess up, you shall know that your descendants shall be many and your offspring like the grass of the earth. You shall come to the grave at a full age, and a sheaf of grain ripens in its season. Behold, Job. Closing statement, we have searched this out. It's true. Listen to us, Job. Hear us. and you'll just learn the truth. You know Job's statement, Job's first speech, remember that last week? Why was I born? Why didn't I die in birth? You know, what's this all about? And so when you get to the next chapter, you get to the point where now Job begins to give his answer to his friends. But he begins in those early verses by talking about all of the things that he has suffered. Verse 2, "Oh, that my grief were fully weighted and my calamity laid with it on the scales. It would be heavier than all of the sands on the sea." How much pain you got, Job? What's the weight of all the sand on the sea? My pain's greater than that. That's remarkable. Let me just make a comment about verse 1. I may make it several other times in this study. When we get to the end of the book of Job, God is going to say, what Job says is right, and what these three friends have said is as wrong as it can be. And so in verse 1, when it says, Job said, that's totally different from what Eliphaz says. And I've seen sometimes people make the mistake when they'll quote something from the book of Job and they'll quote something from one of Job's friends. Well, that's wrong. They may have said a few things that are right, but you don't have any confidence at all. And so as you read the book of Job, and Job says, look, I am suffering. The arrows of the Almighty are within me. My spirit drinks in their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. And he says, here's the wild donkey. Does he bray whenever he's not hurting, when he's got a field full of grass? Or does the ox low over its fodder? And then I love this statement. Can favorless food be eaten without salt? And I bet you may not have known this is in the Bible. Is there any taste in the white of an egg? And so he says, you have all of these things that are happening. But he says, there are things we don't understand. But he said, I'm hurting. And if you will hear me braying like an oxen or like a donkey that has no food, you want to know why I'm saying what I'm saying? I'm hurting. I am really, really hurting. And so when you start down about verse 8, Job longs for his death. Oh, that verse 8, oh, that I might have my request, that God would grant me the thing that I long for. Job, what do you long for? I want to die. You been to that place in your life? Adversities in your life, you just thought, I just wish I was dead. A lot of folks arrive there. And you need to understand that you're in the company of Job. You know, I just wish God would go on and take me. I remember Sister Bill. I can't remember her first name. Judy at the congregation in Birmingham, Shades Mountain. And she outlived all of her children. She outlived everybody her age. And she just verbalized, not that she was in pain. She said, I have no idea why God's got me here. I don't have any place. And did not Paul long for death? Did not Paul said, I have a desire to depart and be with Christ? Now, folks, I'm not advertising suicide. You've got to understand that. But adversity can be such that we can arrive at where Job is. He said, oh, that it would please God to crush me, that he would turn me loose. He's got me clutched in his hand, and he would cut me off. Then I would still have comfort. Though in anguish I would exult, he will not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. But what strength do I have that I should hope? Acts 27, Paul says all hope was lost. Luke says all hope was lost. Been 2 weeks without seeing the sun and moon and stars, having any idea of where they were, being tossed in this ocean, and we've lost hope. And we need to understand that Job is not charging God. He's just saying, why, God? Have you not been there? My dad was sick. We got back from New Zealand after being there for 7 years. My dad was sick, and we knew he had a bad heart. And I guess 2 weeks before he died, I said to my mom, "I'm not worried about Daddy dying. There are too few good men left on this earth, and God needs my daddy on this earth." 2 weeks later, it flipped upside down. Have you not heard widows say, "Why God? Why me?" And that's Job. You see, if Job does not understand chapters 1 and chapters 2, if he doesn't know about this scenario in heaven, guess where Job is? He is exactly where you are in the midst of all your problems. Now, in all of this, Job did not sin to charge God foolishly. And so whenever Job begins to talk to the Almighty, it is not that he is accusing God of being unjust. He just keeps saying, "Why? Why?" Look at verse 15. "My brothers have dealt deceitfully, like a brook, like the streams of the brook that pass away, which are dark because of the ice, and in which the snow vanishes. When it's warm, they cease to flow. When it's hot, they vanish from the place." My brothers are just like, and if he's talking about his brothers, he may be talking about my three friends. That may be the brothers he has in mind instead of his physical brothers. And so here's this stream out there, and you never know whether it's going to be there, have water in it, or what, you know, what's going to be there whenever you get there. And so Job says in verse 22, "Did I ever say, bring something to me or offer a bribe for me from your wealth? Have I ever asked you to do anything underhanded?" He's asking his friends. He's trying to say to his friends, "What wrong have I done? Have I ever said, deliver me from the enemy's hand or redeem me from the hands of the oppressors? Teach me, tell me what's happening, and I will shut up. Teach me, and I will hold my tongue. Cause me to understand what wrong I've done." His friend just came, "Job, fess up." And Job says, "What?" A little bit later in the chapter, he said, "I fed the widows, didn't I? I took care of orphans, did I not? Look at my life, and my life is exemplary of an individual who's trying to live right. I just don't understand why I'm suffering." Now, see, you and I understand what adversity does. "Count it all joy when you fall into temptation." Job didn't have that book, didn't have that verse from James. "Count it all joy when you fall into trials, knowing this," and this is what Job does not know, and that you know because you've got the New Testament, "knowing this, that the trying of your faith builds patience, endurance, and steadfastness. And let patience be perfected. Let patience have its perfect work, and you will be complete and entire, lacking in nothing." I want to ask you something. Is Job a better man before you get to chapter 1 or before, when you get to the end of chapter 42? Adversity gives him understanding. Dave, you had a comment. And what you said is just, what a commentary on people who say, if there's a God, why is this, you know? And they never say, "Wow, look at all the blessings I have. There must be a God." They never, ever, ever get to that point. And of course, they don't understand what adversity does for us. But isn't that remarkable that if they become disbelievers, now they're disbelievers actually beforehand, but they verbalize their disbelief when adversity is there. The flip side of that is they ought to praise God whenever the adversity is not there. That's the God that you and I know. Romans 8:28. "I sure wish that everything would work out. Wouldn't it be great to live in a world where everything's going to work out for good?" He doesn't say, "I wish it." He says, now we know that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. How do we know that? Well, Job's a part of it. And what about all of the other things that are happening? I made the comment one time, and I'll make it again, because I think it's worthy of us to... I file it away in my mind. It helps me. The reason I repeat it is not because I'm old, but because here is something that has really helped me in my life. The worst day that Peter ever had was what? When he's three times cursing and swearing and said, I don't even know Jesus Christ. Who's that? I don't even know that man. And the Lord looked at him. The worst day Peter ever had was that day. And that's the best day Peter ever lived. Christ died for him. That's not bad, is it? And we've got that understanding. But Job's friends are as far away from that as they can be. He says, he says in verse 29, yield now, let there be no injustice. Yes, concede, my righteousness shall stand. Job said, what have I done? Here I'm bringing all these charges. Is there any injustice on my tongue? Just tell me what wrong I've done. And then you get to chapter 7, and chapter 7, leave it down here to my notes. I've got verse 22 and 23. I've got to go back and get those on chapter 6, I guess that is. Job doesn't say, I'm sinless. We need to point that out. Look back in verse 20 and 21. He does not say that I'm sinless. He says, I've done wrong, but this adversity has nothing at all to do with the wrong that's in my life. I put the notes down here and I can't find them. I may have the wrong chapter. Look at verse 25. I'm in chapter 6, by the way. How forcible are right words and the speeches of a desperate one. But what does your arguing prove? Isn't that great? How forceful are right words, but you hadn't said anything that was forceful. Two views of life. Two views of adversity. And Job, characterized by integrity in all of this, Job does not sin. He's just filled with questions. And so whenever we ask God why, there may not be an answer to the why, but it's not outside the realm of us, of it being sinful. It's not inside. We've not crossed over the boundary whenever we say, why, God, why? And so that in and of itself is not sinful. Let's get to chapter 7. That's look in verses 3 through 19. Chapter 7, verses 3 through 19. And the whole point of this is Job in these verses is saying, how long, O Lord, how long? He says, there is there not, a time of hard service for men on the earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hired man? A servant who earnestly desires the shade, and a hired man looks for his wages. So I have allotted months of futility. I've been allotted months of futility and weariness, and wearisome nights have been appointed to me. Even a slave gets to break and take time under the shade tree. And the laborer, not the slave, but the man who earns, who is out working, he gets his wages. But Job says, guess what I've got? And somebody asked me last Wednesday night about how long was it before, how long did Job suffer in relationship to this? Well, here's one of those verses. It's been going on for months, is what it sounds like. I have been allotted months of futilities, and wearisome nights have been appointed me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise? And when will this night be over? For I have had my fill of tossing till dawn. You ever have a toothache? In the middle of the night, you get that ache, that shooting pain someplace in your body. And I don't know if you're like me, but if I just make it till morning, I don't know if I'm the only weird one like that, but just if I just make it in the morning, sun comes up and I don't hurt quite as bad. You know, in that hospital room, I think one of the reasons they wake you up at 5 a.m., they're not coming in to take your temperature. They want you to know it's going to be morning, so start behaving yourself. I'm not sure exactly how all that works out. But I do know this, pain in the night's worse than pain in the middle of the day. And that's what Job is saying. Job is saying, look, guys, I don't have any relief at any point in my life. And so I go to sleep and I toss all night. My flesh is caked with worms and dust. You want to get a picture of that? You want to see those boils on Job's body, all over the top of his head, all down over all of his body? You remember those sores that you may have had before penicillin and some of that great medicine where you had all the pus and they'd take a needle? And, you know, these young people don't know what pain is until your mother takes that needle and pulls that scab off and starts pushing all that pus out of that sore. But guess what Job had? Not only did he have the sores that were seeping, there's dirt in them. And there are worms in it. That's pretty amazing. Dave, come in. Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, failed to mention this before. What on earth is a potsherd? Job scraped his sores, the boils, with a potsherd. What's a potsherd? Piece of pottery. Broken pottery. And he just took it and scraped it. You've done that. You had scab. You ever pull a scab off something? Why? It just feels good. It's going to hurt a lot, but right, if I can just pull that scab off, it won't hurt quite as much. And it does. And you didn't know how attached that scab was in the first place, otherwise it would have been falling off itself, you know. But you just pull it off. And Job is sitting there, and he's hurting so much that he takes you know, a piece of plastic. He goes and gets him a lid to a Tupperware pan, and he just starts scraping that. Gets one of those kitchen knives, one of those plastic kitchen knives, you know, and turns the dull side down and just begins to scrape. That's how much he's hurting, and we need to have an appreciation of the fact of the suffering that Job has. But one friend after another. This maybe it's in this chapter, in verse 20, I guess that's it, chapter 7, verse 20 through 22. Have I sinned? What have I done to you? And you see that word capitalized in my Bible, he turns to God. Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target, so that I'm a burden to myself? Why then do you not pardon my transgressions? Job says, I've got transgressions. But he said, I'm trying to live right. Why do you not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now I will lie down to the dust and you will seek me diligently, but I will no longer be. God, take my life. Let me lie down to the dust and die. Well, you only get to Bildad's speech. I don't know how much time we've got. I got about 3 minutes. Got 5 minutes. Look in chapter 8. Look in chapter 8, those first verses. Bildad the Shuhite. He's called a Shuhite because there were these people in Bible lands that were 3 inches high. They were Shuhite. You don't believe that, okay? I made that up, but I mean, when I read about a shoe height, I just wonder, what's a shoe height? I don't know. Probably not a 3-inch midget. But anyway, the shoe height said, Job, how long will you speak these things? How long will your mouth be like a bag of wind? How's that for an opening comment? Bad enough, you know, he had to listen to Eliphaz, had to deal with Eliphaz, now his second friend. Maybe there'll be some relief. Do you think God has subverted judgment? You think God has brought judgment on the wrong person? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? God, Job, don't you know God? God's going to treat people the way they deserve to be treated, and the righteous never suffer. And Job, you're suffering. Isn't that amazing? Do you know the televangelist prosperity doctrine? If you live right, God will bless you, especially if you send your money to me, the televangelist says, and God will replace it every bit. Prosperity. And they're all over the television saying, give to me and God will bless you. Because, and the implication is, God always blesses those who are trying to live right. Who of all people in the Bible suffered the most? Shall we say Jesus? You want to convince Jesus of the prosperity gospel? A common thing happens to the good and to the evil, and that is adversity. Rich people die, or pardon me, godly people die and evil people die. Sometimes we apparently think that the evil prosper more than the righteous, but that's not always the case. Well, this is probably a good stopping place. I hope you're enjoying this. I don't know, but I tried to read this several times before I come in here and just try to get the feeling, and I try to read it, and once I understand what Bildad says, then I become Job. And I listen to what Bildad said, and if I'd been up there, I'd have taken a baseball bat and hit Bildad on the back of the head. I'm serious. He doesn't have any choice. Okay, that's a good stopping place, all right? Thank you very much.